Welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and I could not be more delighted to have with us debut author Jenna Levine. I knew I was going to get that wrong, whose new book is My Roommate is a Vampire. I could not be more thrilled to have Jenna with us today. And before we begin our chat, I'd like to let those tuning in know that the Poison Pen does have copies of Jenna's new book, and we would be happy to hold one for you or put one in the mail. Just go online to the Poison Pen's web store or give us a call, and we can connect you with this truly fabulous and fun book. And now I'd like to welcome Jenna.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. This is very excited to talk about myself and about my book. So thank you again for the invitation.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I always love discovering an author who's starting out in their career, and your debut is just fun and fresh and all those wonderful adjectives. But before we talk about your book, tell us a little bit about Jenna prior to becoming an author, because you have an interesting backstory.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing some kind of important things in your day job. I mean,
oh,
not
yes.
That writing romance is not.
Yes. So I have been, yes, I have been a practicing attorney for several decades now.
Wow.
And currently teach at a law school, where my students and I work on housing insecurity projects, representing renters needing rental assistance, facing eviction, and so on. And so it is extremely different. It's a different life entirely from what I do here. But I have found that, you know, my day job is extremely serious, or has been extremely serious for a very long time now. And I have long found that writing very lighthearted, humorous romance novels has just sort of personally been a wonderful balance to other very disparate parts of my life.
Yeah, the last couple of years have been rough on everybody, so it's great to have something that you can laugh at and enjoy. Did you always want to be an author, or were you more interested in law as a career growing up?
So I never really thought being an author was a thing that I could do. Some of it, a little bit, and this absolutely ages me, some of it was, you know, when I was much younger, computers were newer. word processing software. Like when I was a teenager, like not everybody had computers. And so the idea of like actually writing an entire novel on my parents' typewriter or my parents' very antiquated Commodore 64 or whatever, it just seemed really daunting. Like I probably just made myself sound older than I actually am. But then as I got older, you know, I definitely felt that, and I don't think this is incorrect, you know, the life of an author is a very unstable one. It's it's a very hard profession, industry to do if like, okay, you go into it thinking this is how I'm going to support myself. Mm-hmm. And my opinion on that has not changed. Mm-hmm. But I just, you know, okay, so finally, like, oh, okay, it's easier to write now with computers and everything. But, you know, I had my parents who, you know, making them proud of me was a very, you know, very embedded thing. Yeah. As was the idea of, you know, a career that I enjoyed, but that also would reliably pay my bills. Mm-hmm. And so early, you know, by the time I got to college, and certainly after I graduated from college, we're in the like late 90s now. I just was like, okay, a profession. I was good at the kinds of standardized tests and the kind of classes that lawyers needed to be good at. And so I was like, oh, and I feel passionately about social justice issues. And I like the idea of thinking deeply about important things. And so I went to law school, which my mindset going into it was extremely naive. So if anybody here is listening thinking, I want to go to law school so I can make a difference, That might be the subject of another podcast. But I quickly discovered that, yes, you can do these incredible things with a law degree, but there are very hard limits to it as well. So it wasn't until, you know, I was later on in my career, I married a partner who had a very stable profession, that I felt secure enough, I think, that I could turn to this as something, you know, and that I could do without the worries of financial instability that, you know, unless, you know, 99.9% of authors have to worry about, you know, income streams and such. It took me until I was at a point in my life where people are like, okay, second career, that I felt really I could do that. And that may have been entirely too much information.
No. I think it's important to let especially aspiring writers out there kind of know that the journey is not the same for everyone, but you're right. No. 95% of writers today in the US make, I think, less than $5,000 a year. So if you're, yes, in it to make a living, good luck to you, but don't pin all your hopes on that.
Yes. And it's, you know, I could go on and on and on about how I feel about that. I get none, but it's just a fact. So yeah,
it's something, yeah, you have to address. So you finally decided you wanted to pursue writing. What was your initial path to publication like? Because if I'm correct, your debut book, My Roommate is a Vampire, started out as some form of fan fiction.
Yes, or the idea of it did. Okay. it actually was, so while I was realizing slowly that I could potentially have a career doing publishing, I spent a lot of time playing around in fan fiction sandboxes, and having the time of my life, really. And this did start out as it was like a 20 tweet shit post, I guess you could say, that really, aside from the general premise, bears no resemblance to like the final novel. But yes, it did start out, the idea of it started out sort of in fan fiction sandbox. But then the journey towards taking that, I mean, I functionally had to write it from scratch. So I had like the premise. Mm-hmm. And I really spent an extent, I mean, it took well over a year to flesh that out into something that would look like a novel, that had plot beats that you'd find in a novel. And that wasn't just, you know, limited to the, back then when it was Twitter, you were limited to the 280 word or character tweet string. I mean,
it was much more structured.
Quite a long time. Yeah.
How did you, what you have your kind of manuscript in progress, your work in progress. I know that for some writers, they just send it off and it's like almost instantaneous. Other writers, it's a long haul. What, yes, was getting this book to the right publisher and the right editor like?
So I definitely benefited from the fact that I was part of the fan fiction sandbox. Without question, like that. And I don't know that this is inspiring to any of your listeners, and you may want to edit this out if you think it's not something that people want to hear. But at, you know, the success of Allie Hazelwood's novel, I think really made a lot of publishers and a lot of agents think, oh, there is a built-in readership here. And so I did not have the I know so many extremely talented writers who spend years finding the right agent, then going out on sub. I think that because of my writing origins, that path was considerably, I mean, I can't put enough emphasis on the word considerably easier, mm-hmm, for me. It did not take me long to find a home for the book or an agent. So
it's writing and getting published is part talent, part timing, part luck. There's all these
without
things
question
coming into play. And I think I could be wrong, but coming from a law background, there's a lot of writing involved in that too. It's a very different kind of writing, but that probably yes. was a form of training in and of itself.
Without question. I've been very, even before I realized that, yes, I actually can be a writer and have it be a part of my life. I mean, I've been working hard with words for decades, and yes, very, very different kinds of writing. A demand letter to a landlord is not or brief. Yeah. Not at all the same. The audience is completely different. Mm-hmm. They are not in the mood to laugh and fall in love with characters. They are in the mood to fight most of the time. But yes, it was absolutely training. And I do think that anybody that wants to become a writer, any kind of writing you can get your hands on is just the best kind of training. It's all practice, it's all experience.
What can you tell us about My Roommate is a Vampire for those not familiar?
So My Roommate is a Vampire asks some really weighty questions. Specifically, what would you do if your hot, mysterious roommate turned out to be a hot, mysterious vampire? You know, who among us has not asked ourselves that question? No, in all seriousness, the book, it really can be summed up quite well by the title. It follows Cassie Greenberg, who is a sort of down in her luck between jobs artist, who's being evicted and needs to find an affordable place to live fast. And through the help of her friend, she finds an ad for an apartment. Sounds too good to be true. The person who's renting the room is asking a ridiculously small amount of money for it. But her friend is like, see what it's like. It turns out the apartment's fabulous. She moves in. And then I think the rest can kind of be summed up by the title. Hijinks ensue. A good portion of the book is actually told through, it's a
epistolatory.
Thank you. Yes. I think epistolary,
epistolatory or epistolatory, but well, it's told through letters, diary extracts.
Yes. Emails, yes. Texts. And so when I wrote this book, I knew I wanted it to be fairly offbeat. And I wanted the vampire backstory to be as ridiculous as I could get away with. I was very inspired by What We Do in the Shadows during the pandemic, which is a hilarious TV show about a found family of vampires living in Staten Island and fumbling their way through a modern world. And so I wanted the tone to borrow, like, I just loved that show. It really got me through. And so I felt that if I gave Frederick, who is the mysterious roommate, a traditional point of view, you know, when you read a book, there's different points of view. I worried that the sort of off the rails backstory that I wanted for vampires to have would sort of fall apart. And so I, you know, if you look at anything silly too closely, it sometimes, it's kind of like I compare it to when you're, when you're a potter on the wheel, if there's a tiny little wobble, the more you sort of go with it, the wobblier it gets, and then it kind of falls out. And so I wanted to give him a point of view, but have it be very limited. And I actually thought that having his entire point of view be represented through letters he writes, text messages, emails. I thought, actually, I don't know if I have him write an email. I may not. But journal entries, I thought would be just a really fun way to capture that.
You do. There's his letters to his mother, his letters to his friend, his letters to Cassie, his diary. I mean, it's a wonderful, really clever way of giving readers insight to his character without him actually speaking the words himself.
Thank you.
Now I had another question. You completely captivated me and I've forgotten that, so we'll have to get back on track.
I don't get that a lot, actually.
No. Well, your protagonist, Frederick, I think you do make it, at least for me as a reader, and I think other readers, reasonable that because he's not fluent in modern times, there's a reason why he and Cassie can have come to this arrangement. She needs this fabulous place to stay. He needs someone to tutor him in what it's like to live in 2020.
Yes. I'm glad that that worked for you.
It did. Your setting is Chicago. And I know that for many writers, there's kind of this dual aspect to putting a book in a real place. On the one hand, it really, if it's a place you're familiar with, you can really lean into that. But there's also kind of, what if I get streets wrong or somebody finds out that this building was not on the corner here and there? Why Chicago? And have you experienced any of those you got something wrong moments?
So I lived, Chicago was the first place I lived with my husband right after we got married, right after law school. And I just remember it sort of like as a young, I was 25. We just had a lot of fun. And so I just remember it so fondly. And I was like, where better to set this very fun novel? I definitely, but having said that, I've not lived there in quite some time. And so I definitely, in the earlier drafts, I have a close friend who's also been a critique partner of mine ever since we both were writing fan fiction, who lives in Chicago right now. And she's like, actually, this neighborhood is like this right now. I definitely went lighter on some of the Chicago details than I could have because I was aware that I've been to Chicago many times in the years since, haven't lived there in a long time. I feel like if I'd gone heavier with some of the details, more people would have come out and said, so far, before publication, yes, absolutely. If anybody has noticed things like that since it's been out, they've been kind enough not to tag me in those comments. But, you know, I think that there's always going to be people who nitpick, and I would not be stunned if I did get some things wrong. So.
Well, you can always tell them that you intentionally put one flaw into the book because it's like with Persian rugs. They always leave one area slightly irregular because God is the only one who can do something perfectly.
Oh, but, my goodness. That's fabulous.
That's my excuse.
I'm going to use that with every negative review I get.
There you go.
That's one great. Things, I'm totally going to borrow that.
One of the things I think you did capture for me, and I've only visited Chicago, is that it's not monolithic. It's not one big city. It is definitely neighborhoods.
Yeah.
For that.
Good. I'm glad.
Now let's talk a little bit about the tone of the book. And I don't know whether it's true for you or not, but they say when it comes to theatrical world that dying is easy, comedy is hard. You've written a romantic comedy. Was the comedy part difficult for you? Do you naturally find yourself leaning into kind of sharp humor, ironic tones? Do your friends constantly tell you you're hilarious?
I don't like complimenting my own anything.
No, you have to.
Extremely hard for me to do. But I knew when I started this that I wanted to write a funny book. I think that like, and a lot of this book was written during the pandemic. And when I'm stressed or unhappy or just panic, I tend to sort of cope with dark humor. That's something I've really done my whole life. I mean, and I'm not saying that this is me, but you hear stories about how a lot of comedians grapple with severe depression. That's not at all. I mean, you don't hear that a lot, but there are famous examples of that. And I certainly am not, you know, I don't have, but I do think that because I wrote it when I did, I leaned into the humor a lot. But I also feel that I just really like writing comedy. I do think, you know, this is extremely painful for me, but I do think it's something that I'm good at. There are certainly like any number of other things writing wise that I struggle with, I will never be able to do. I could do a whole other podcast on those, but I do think humor is one thing that I have a strength. So
it does show in the book, and I don't think there's any shame in admitting your strengths, because you're right, there are a lot of different flavors of romance. People who don't read romance fiction sometimes think like Chicago, it's monolithic, but no, there's angsty romance, there's intense romance, there's dark romance, there's light and humorous romance. And I think as a writer, it's important to discover what your skill set lies in and lean into that. So I'm glad to hear that humor is one of your part of your literary DNA. That's good to know.
It is. Angst is not. So I think I can just say right now that angsty readers are probably going to be disappointed in my works.
So if they're looking for the next Colleen Hoover, yours is not the book to read.
No. But there's Colleen Hoover, so that's great.
That's right. You have all these different choices. What is your writing process like? Because you have a rather challenging day job.
How do you
fit in writing? And it's different for every writer, but talk a little bit about how you structure your writing time.
So this has been such a challenge. And it's sort of been a work in progress, because I went from writing being how I had fun, like it was a hobby, to something that was a job. And so what I used to do really, it took me some time to realize that was not going to work anymore. That was a process, a painful one. Because, you know, when it's a hobby, if you get really busy, you can set it aside. You can work on it in your spare time to unwind. But if this be, you know, I had to sort of quickly realize that the spot in my life that writing occupied is no longer the same thing. Like, it could no longer be what I used to unwind or to relax, because then I would truly have no relaxing time because this was a job. In an ideal world, I could say, okay, so from 9 to noon on Saturdays, I write. And then from, 2 to 4 on Friday, pencil it in on my calendar. And I do that. But as any writer, not just fiction, people who write for their jobs, like academics, my husband is an academic. I know a lot of people who write to get tenure and so on. The words don't always come from 9 to noon on a Saturday. This is when I have time to write. I'm going to sit down to write, and then it's just a cursor blinking at me. And so I do have to do that. I absolutely have to pencil in, this is my writing time. But I also have to be forgiving of myself if during that scheduled writing time, the words don't happen. There's that. I also have had to absolutely make a designated spot in my home be where I write. For a while, I was like, oh, I'm gonna lie down on the couch and write with my feet propped up and a drink. That just wasn't working. So I have a spot in like a desk. I'm lucky enough to have the space in my home to have my desk shares space with like our exercise bike and some cat toys and such. So it's not just an office, but it is a desk, a designated space where I write. And that actually helps my brain kick into creativity mode, because it associates this space with, okay, working out on the Peloton, but also working on my book. So, it's been a lot of trial and error. And I know authors who have told me, I'm on my fourth book. Nothing that worked for my last book is working for this one. I have to do different things. Mm-hmm. But I feel like at least for, I'm busily drafting my second book right now. And I'm finding that, learning what did work and didn't work in my first book is helping tremendously with book two.
Which brings us to my next question. Now you've got one published book to your credit.
Yes. Yes.
What have you learned in the process about publishing that you wish someone had told you when you were first starting out?
So much. I think the biggest thing is how little control authors have over any of it.
Yeah.
Like literally any piece of it. You can control the words on your page. To some extent, you can control how fast and how much you write. Like, I think, you know, there are some people who are like, I am only going to do this, so I'm going to be able to write two or three books. Like, there's that amount of control. But literally everything else is out of your control. Whether you get an agent, which agent you get, whether you get a book deal, how good your book deal is, if readers are going to like it, what kind of reviews you'll get. If you happen to have hit a zeitgeist.
Zeitgeist, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've tapped into like a trend.
Mm-hmm.
Social media algorithms, smiling. I mean, I could go on and on and on. And I knew going into it that it was going to be out of my control, but it was one thing to know it, and it was an entirely other thing to experience it. And I come from a background where, I mean, certainly not everything was within my control. Mm-hmm. A judge may be like, no,
yeah,
I'm not going to agree with you. But like, I would work hard and could expect to see a certain something in, you know, performance reviews. Like I usually knew what I could expect. There's literally none of that here. And some of it is, you know, you can put it at the feet of the publishing industry. I think that they could be more transparent about a lot of things, about their processes, about sales numbers and so on. But I think even if, and they are quite opaque about a lot of things, about sharing data with writers and so on. But I think even if they were a lot more transparent, there's just an element of you cannot control your career. That is, it can be debilitating, really, if you allow it to be.
Yes.
And
yeah.
even if you don't allow it to be, even if you, you know, refuse to accept, you know what I mean? Like, it's just really, really hard. And I, you know, and so I tell people who want to go into writing this, but again, I think it's something that even if you're told it, you have to, because there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
There's no other comparable experience to the, at least for me, to the complete lack of control.
You're right. Another author had kind of made fun of the process in a book that she recently wrote. And I'm paraphrasing her, but she was talking about publishing individuals who kept telling her her book was not marketable, but they could never define what marketable was to her.
Yes.
So it's like, it's mm-hmm. you're not hitting the mark, but we can't tell you what marks to look. It's a crazy business. I mean,
it is.
There's a lot
it
of
is.
Highs and lows.
And touching back on what I talked about earlier, like I don't regret not jumping in headfirst 20 years ago for all of these reasons. Like I sort of feel like I needed to have a lot of other things in place before I could.
I think you're right. And I think it can't be overemphasized. Every writer's journey is individual. I mean, everybody wants the magic key, the ultimate guide, what's going to get, but it can take one author a year to get published, another author 15 years, another author may never. And it's all those things that come into play. But as long as you are happy with what you're producing, that's one of the most important things.
I agree.
Let's talk a little bit about Jenna as a reader, because you've written a romantic comedy with paranormal elements. Have you always been a romance reader? What are some of the books that you look back and think, wow, those were influencing me as a reader and perhaps as a writer?
Gosh. Well, I read a lot of fan fiction
okay.
in my years participating in that. I think, you know, I've always read pretty diverse things. So I definitely would not say I read exclusively romance. I've read a lot of fantasy novels as well. That's not a genre I would feel comfortable writing in, but I love reading other worlds that people create. N.K. Jemisin is so incredible. I read her Broken Earth trilogy over the past few years and just loved every word of it. Romance, I think that Lisa Kleypas was probably actually some of the first romance. This was years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her prose was great. And I loved all the setups where there's like five siblings and mm-hmm. each one of them needs to find a spouse. And, oh, you know, is this one going to marry the rake in need of reforming? Is this one going to marry the school marm? I mean, mm-hmm. and how are they going to make this work? And, oh, they do make it work. And they were really influential early on. And this was long before I thought I could really be part of this world. So those are definite favorites. And as I've gotten into publishing, I've read quite a few paranormal romances. I love Aaron Sterling's witchy books.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I'm very good friends with Sarah Hawley. I loved her A Witch's Guide to Fake Dating a Demon. She has a second book coming out. And her titles are lengthy, and I loved it. A Demon's Guide to Wooing a Witch, I think, is her second.
I think, that might be it.
Yeah, I've loved those very much, despite the fact that I'm her title. I struggle with titles. I think we've talked a little bit about pronunciation being struggling. Remember how I feel when I read the books and I remember the author's names, and sometimes titles are a bit, you know. I love Ashley Poston's books so much. The Dead Romantics was absolutely, one of my favorite books the year it came out. 7 Year Slip is incredible. So those are some of my, I guess, recent favorites that I've read. And I'm looking forward to having a deadline that's looming behind me so that I can get back to
the fun reading. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It sounds like you, when as a reader, you kind of skew towards the lighter side of paranormals.
Definitely.
Which is an interesting trend, because for those of us who've been around a while, like myself, 10 years or even 15 years ago, paranormal romances were all the dark, kind of intense, brooding things. And now we've come a little bit further.
I do think also my reading and my taste in media has really shifted over the past decade. I think that the person I was 10, 20 years ago read darker and consumed media that was darker. And I don't know if it's a reaction, and this is something that I've thought a lot about. It might actually be just a reaction to how hard everything has mm-hmm. become that. And I think also my job has gotten, I've dealt with grittier, I've done other sorts of law in the past, mm-hmm. in the past decade, has been grappling with some serious social problems. And I do think that,
the world's gotten very difficult.
The pandemic. I do think that I've gravitated more towards the lighter side of things.
It's interesting because just as a parallel, when you think back to the 1930s, the movies were all the madcap comedies, and all those things were the rage too. So people wanted something that kind of took
escapism.
Them out of what they were living. You've mentioned, and I don't know how far you want to go into it or if you even do, but there is something in the works for you that readers can expect.
Yeah. So I have another book. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say just yet, but it's coming out in a little over a year, I think-ish, in the same universe as My Roommate is a Vampire. And I think in a couple of months, I'll be able to be a lot more specific.
Which kind of leads into our next question. If readers want to, or listeners want to learn more about you and your books, what social media platforms are you on? How can they discover more about your books?
I have a website that is languishing horribly. I need to get a web developer. So the best place for current updates is actually my Instagram. I struggle a lot with social media and I have a lot of existential like why are we all online all of the time about it? But it is the best place. I update it very frequently. And that is Jenna Levine Writes, all one word. That's my Instagram. And anytime there's something new happening, I post there. And then eventually it gets on my website. So
you also have a newsletter, don't you? Too?
I do. Okay. I do.
And people can sign up for that.
Yes, they can. There's a link to it on my Instagram and on my website, which is jennalevine.com. I don't know what the URL is for signing up for it. But if you go to my website or my Instagram, it'll be there.
Find it there. And are those, you have on your Instagram account, there's the occasional, absolutely adorable, I think is the only word, images of little knitted vampires. Is that a
yes.
project that you are doing or is someone do?
So it? My friend has made those guys and her name is Sarah and she's so talented. I actually can knit. I have a bit of elbow tendonitis right now for reasons that might be apparent. But she has made them and they are just my favorite thing. I love them.
And my final question for you, because we've rapidly come to the end of our time, is how does one acquire a small army of cats and how do you train them?
So it's actually not that hard to acquire a small army of cats.
That's true.
It does take time and attention to detail. Mm-hmm. But actually, no, you just sort of go to the shelter and like are a softie like me and you get cats. It's pretty easy. Training them, however, it takes more time. And I've had mixed success with it. If they're already doing the thing I want to train them to do, it goes pretty well. Mm-hmm. Or if it's already something they like to do, but if it's something like, you know, stop eating your food so quickly, mm-hmm. stop throwing up a hairball, that's poor. That very bad success rates with that.
Yeah, it's an ongoing project for cat lovers.
Indeed, indeed, indeed.
I can't believe how quickly our time has gone by. The Poison Pen has been incredibly fortunate to have with us Jenna Levine. Levine.
Yes, Levine.
Levine. I will get it right eventually. Whose new book is My Roommate is a Vampire. Thank you, Jenna, for taking time to share with us about your book and your writing. And I'd like to thank everyone listening in to another recorded author chat with the Poison Pen Bookstore.
Thank you so much. It's been delightful.
Thank you.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.